You're listening to Radio Hangar Aviation Talk, powered by AI, fueled by passion. Welcome back to the hangar, folks. I'm Tail Dragger, and today we are going somewhere loud, fast, and just a little bit dangerous. We're heading out to the high desert of northern Nevada, Reno, the National Championship Air Races, the fastest motorsport on the planet, and I don't say that lightly. We're talking about airplanes ripping around pylons at 400 miles an hour, 50 feet off the sagebrush, wingtip to wingtip with other airplanes doing the exact same thing. There's nothing else like it on Earth. Nothing. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. If you've ever stood on a ramp and felt the ground shake as an unlimited racer screamed past, you know that feeling in your chest. Aviation Soul gets it. Gear, apparel, and gifts for people who live and breathe aviation. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, pull up a chair because this story starts long before Reno, long before Nevada. It starts with a bunch of guys in the 1920s who looked at their airplanes and said, "I bet mine's faster than yours." That's really all air racing ever was. A dare between pilots. The national air races go all the way back to 1920 when they held the first Pulitzer Trophy race. And in those early days, it was military pilots flying military fighters, pushing the absolute edge of what those machines could do. The Thompson Trophy, the Bendix Trophy, names that meant something. Names that made front page news. Guys like Jimmy Doolittle, Roscoe Turner with that waxed mustache and his pet lion. I'm not making that up. Roscoe Turner flew with a lion cub named Gilmore in the cockpit. Different era, friends, very different era, but the golden age of air racing came to an end. World War II pulled every fast airplane and every good pilot into the fight, and after the war, jets were coming. The old Formula Racers, the GBs, and the Laird Super Solutions, they were relics overnight. Air racing just sort of faded away. For almost 20 years, it was gone. Then along comes a fella named Bill Stead, rancher pilot, a man who liked fast things. Bill Stead looked out at the flat desert north of Reno, Nevada, and he saw a racetrack. In 1964, he organized the first national championship air races at a place called Sky Ranch, which was basically a dirt strip in the middle of nowhere. The first year, they had maybe a couple dozen airplanes, a handful of spectators sitting on pickup truck tailgates, and more jackrabbits than people. But it worked. It was magic. Now here's where it gets interesting. Bill Stead didn't just want airplanes flying time trials. He wanted them racing together, simultaneously, around a closed course marked by pylons. And not little gentlemanly pylons set miles apart. He wanted tight courses. He wanted the pilots to see each other. He wanted the crowd to see the airplanes. He wanted barroom brawl, elbow-to-elbow racing. And that's exactly what he got. The races moved to Reno Stead Airport in 1966, named after Bill, by the way, who tragically died in a racing accident in 1966 at the very event he created. That tells you something about the kind of people drawn to this sport. They know the risks, they accept them, and they show up anyway. Let me set the scene for you, because if you've never been to Reno in September, you're missing one of the great experiences in all of aviation. You drive north out of town, past the casinos and the subdivisions, and the land opens up. High desert, brown and gold sagebrush as far as you can see, ringed by mountains. The air is dry, thin. You're at about 5,000 feet elevation. The sky is that deep western blue that doesn't exist anywhere east of the Rockies. You pull into the airport, and the first thing you notice is the sound. Even from the parking lot, you can hear it. That deep, guttural, unmistakable rumble of a big round engine, a Pratt & Whitney R2800 or maybe a Rolls-Royce Merlin. 27 liters of supercharged fury warming up on the ramp. You feel it in your sternum before you even see the airplane. You walk through the gates and there they are, lined up on the ramp, like racehorses in their stalls. Mustangs, Bearcats, Sea Furies, Hawker Sea Furies, built by the British after the war. And let me tell you, a Sea Fury at full chat is one of the most beautiful and terrifying sounds in aviation. That big Bristol Centaurus sleeve valve engine howling, five rows of nine cylinders. 45 cylinders total, for those of you keeping score at home. And then there are the modified racers, the ones that barely resemble the fighters they started as. Let me tell you about a few of the legends. Rare Bear, a Grumman F8F Bearcat that was so heavily modified it made the original Grumman engineers nervous. Lyle Shelton flew Rare Bear to a piston engine world speed record of 528 miles per hour in 1989, 528, in a propeller-driven airplane. Think about that. That record still stands today. Lyle Shelton was a big, quiet guy, looked like he should be driving a combine harvester, not flying the fastest piston airplane on Earth. But when he strapped into that Bearcat, he was something else entirely. Then there's Voodoo, a beautiful, sleek P-51 Mustang that was stretched, clipped, and polished until it looked like it was going fast, sitting still. Steve Hinton Jr. flew Voodoo to dominate the Unlimited class for years, and if the name Hinton sounds familiar, it should. His father, Steve Hinton Sr., won the Unlimited Gold in 1978, flying the Red Baron, a highly modified RB51 Mustang. And his father nearly died doing it. Engine failure on the course, dead stick landing into the desert. He walked away. Barely. And his son grew up to do the same thing. That's an air racing family. Now the racing itself. Let me walk you through what a heat actually looks like. The Unlimited course at Reno is roughly 8 to 9 miles around, marked by pylons that are basically telephone poles with 55-gallon drums painted bright orange on top. The airplanes fly a rolling start. They take off, get into formation behind a pace plane, and when the pace plane pulls up and away, the flag drops and it is on.
8 airplanes. 8 pilots. All of them diving for the first pylon at 350-400 miles an hour, 50 feet off the ground. The G-forces in the turns are brutal. 6-7 Gs sometimes, and these are not fly-by-wire fighter jets with G-suits and pressurized cockpits. These are 70- and 80-year-old airframes with stick and rudder and a pilot whose vision is going gray in the turns. The air at Reno is turbulent in the afternoon. Thermals coming off the desert floor. You hit a bump at 400 miles an hour and it's not a bump, it's a sledgehammer. The airplane jumps, the wings flex, and for a half second you're wondering if those spar caps are going to hold. The good racers, the experienced ones, they read the air. They know which parts of the course get rough and when. And here's the thing that gets people. They're racing each other. This isn't a time trial. You're looking out the canopy and there's a Sea Fury, 20 feet off your left wing and a Mustang pulling up behind you, and you're all doing 400 miles an hour and you're making passing decisions. Trying to go low, cut inside at the pylon, maybe draft behind the guy ahead of you in the straightaway. There's no other form of racing that combines this speed, this proximity, and this consequence. Because the consequence is absolute. There's no pit stop. There's no pulling over. You can't coast to a halt. If something goes wrong at 400 miles an hour, 50 feet off the deck, your options are limited and none of them are good. The history of Reno is written in both triumph and tragedy. And we have to talk about that because you can't honestly tell this story without it. September 16, 2011. The Unlimited Gold Race. A modified P-51 Mustang called the Galloping Ghost, flown by a pilot named Jimmy Leeward. Jimmy was 74 years old, an experienced racer, a good man. During the race, something happened to the aircraft's trim system. The airplane pitched up violently, rolled, and came down into the spectator area at over 400 miles an hour. Jimmy Leeward was killed. 10 spectators on the ground were killed. Dozens more were injured. It was the worst disaster in the history of modern air racing.
The aviation community was devastated. There were calls to end the races permanently, understandably so. When you lose spectators, when innocent people on the ground die, the calculus changes. But the races came back. The following year, 2012, they moved the spectators farther from the course. They added restrictions on the older, more heavily modified airframes. They implemented new safety protocols. And the community came back too. Not because they forgot what happened, because they remembered, and they decided that the right response to tragedy was not to quit, but to do better. To honor the people they lost by making the sport as safe as they possibly could. That's something I respect deeply. It would have been easy to walk away. Nobody would have blamed them. But they didn't. Now, Reno isn't just the Unlimiteds, and I'd be doing the sport a disservice if I didn't talk about the other classes, because some of the best racing happens below 400 miles an hour. The T6 class, North American T6 Texans, World War II trainers. Round engine, fixed pitch propeller, and they are limited to stock configuration, so the only variable is the pilot. Same airplane, same engine, same prop, and they're out there doing 230 miles an hour around the pylons, canopy to canopy, and the racing is absolutely phenomenal. If you want to see pure piloting skill decide a race, watch the T6s.
The biplane class. Little homebuilts and modified pits specials doing maybe 200 miles an hour. Don't let the speed fool you. The biplane course is tight, the racing is close, and those little airplanes are nimble. It's like watching go-karts after you've watched Formula One. Different kind of exciting, but exciting nonetheless. The sport class. Purpose-built composite racers, sleek, efficient, fast. These are the Formula One cars of air racing. Designed from scratch to race. Some of the most innovative engineering in aviation is happening in sport class garages. Formula One class. Tiny, 190 cubic inch engines. Wingspan 16 feet. These things are flying lawnmowers. And they race in a swarm. 15-20 airplanes in a heat sometimes. Incredible to watch.
And then there's the jet class, which they added later. L-39. Albatros trainers. T-33. Shooting stars. Jets racing around pylons. It's a different spectacle. The speed is there, 500 miles an hour plus, but the sound is different. And honestly, for an old piston engine guy like me, I'll always love the Unlimited's best. That sound. Nothing else sounds like a Merlin at 54 inches of manifold pressure. Back when Evgas was cheap and airspace was free, I used to go to Reno every September. Drove out from California with a couple of buddies. We'd camp at the airport, sleep under the wing of somebody's Bonanza. Wake up at dawn with the cold desert air coming through the tent flap and the smell of jet fuel and sagebrush and coffee. Walk out to the ramp and watch the crews prepping the racers, cowlings off, mechanics with their heads buried in engine bays, pilots walking around with that particular look on their face. The look that says, I know what I'm about to do and I'm going to do it anyway. There was one year, I want to say 1997 or 98, I was standing right by the number 3 pylon, close enough to feel the prop wash, and the Unlimiteds came around on the last lap of the gold race. And it was Strega and Rare Bear, nose to nose, and they came around that pylon so close to each other and so close to the ground that I swear I could see the rivets on the belly. The noise was beyond description. It wasn't sound anymore. It was a physical event. Your chest vibrated, your vision blurred, and then they were gone, trailing heat haze and the smell of high-octane exhaust, and the crowd just erupted. You can watch that on YouTube. You can see the footage, but you cannot feel it through a screen. You have to be there. You have to have the sagebrush crunching under your boots and the sun on the back of your neck and that sound hitting you in the chest like a fist. That's Reno.
The races have had their ups and downs. There were financial struggles. The future of the event has been uncertain more than once. After the 2011 accident, there was genuine doubt about whether it could continue. And more recently, the organizers announced that the 2023 races would be the last at Reno Stead Airport, after nearly 60 years at that location. They're looking for a new home. The Reno Air Racing Association has been exploring other sites. There's talk of moving the races, keeping the tradition alive in a new location, and that matters because Reno isn't really about Reno, it's about the people. The mechanics who spend all year building engines that only need to last 8 laps, the fabricators who shave a quarter inch off a wing fillet to gain 2 miles an hour, the pilots who strap into machines that are pushing the absolute limits of what piston-powered flight can achieve, and the fans, the families who've been coming for 3 generations, the kids who stand on the ramp and watch a Mustang spool up and feel that thing happen in their chest, and they're hooked. They're hooked for life. That's how it gets you. That's how aviation gets all of us, really. A single moment, a single sound, a single sight that reaches into your brain and rewires something permanently, for a lot of people. Reno was that moment. So wherever the races end up, whether it's Nevada, or Texas, or somewhere else entirely, I hope they keep going. I hope some kid 50 years from now gets to stand at the edge of a desert runway and feel the ground shake as an Unlimited racer blasts past at 400 miles an hour. Because that experience, that raw, visceral, unfiltered experience of speed and sound and skill, that's worth preserving. That's worth fighting for. Now, I want to tell you one more story before we wrap up, because I think it captures what Reno really is. There was a racer named Skip Holm, fighter pilot, test pilot, one of the best stick and rudder men who ever lived. Skip flew Dago Red, a gorgeous P-51 Mustang red and white, fast as blazes. And Skip didn't just race to win, he raced with a kind of grace that was unusual at Reno. He'd come around the pylon smooth as glass, never a wasted motion, never a dramatic pull. Just perfect, efficient, beautiful flying. Watching Skip Holm fly a pylon course was like watching a great jazz musician play. You knew you were watching mastery. Skip passed away in 2019. And when they held the races after that, the old-timers on the ramp would talk about him the way you talk about anyone you've lost who was really, truly great at what they did. Not with sadness exactly, with gratitude. Gratitude that they got to see it. Gratitude that they were there. That's Reno. Speed and grace and risk and loss and community. All of it. Together, all of it inseparable. Today's segment drew from histories published by the Reno Air Racing Association, the National Aviation Heritage Area, reporting from Air and Space Magazine, AVWeb, and the Smithsonian's Archives on American Air Racing. As always, Radio Hangar is an AI-generated program, built by folks who love aviation and want to share that love with you. If you want to learn more, head to radiohangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger. Thanks for sitting in the hangar with me today. Go find an air show this summer. Stand close enough to feel it, you'll understand Radio Hangar. Keep the blue side up.